At this time, I'm going to ask Carolyn to come up, Dr. Lefkowitz, and to talk to us about managing that patient with pre-existing opioid use.
So, excuse this cold. I got fall camping in Colorado this weekend. But my name is Carolyn Lefkowitz. I'm a GYN oncologist and a palliative care physician at the University of Colorado. And I'm delighted to be talking to you today about managing the patient with pre-existing opioid use. I don't have any relevant financial disclosures. My objectives are that by the end of this portion of the panel, you would be able to recognize pre-existing opioid use as a comorbidity relevant to the perioperative period, list at least two adverse perioperative outcomes that have been associated with pre-existing opioid use, and identify at least one modification to make in the preoperative, intraoperative, and postoperative periods for patients with pre-existing opioid use. So let's start with how patients with pre-existing opioid use are different. First, their physiology is different. Both a history of strong pain stimuli and pre-existing opioid exposure can cause hyperexcitability and central sensitization of the nervous system, causing these patients to be opioid tolerant. And what does that mean exactly? I want to review just a couple of definitions quickly. Opioid tolerance refers to the decrease in pharmacologic effect that occurs after repeat administration of opioids. So this refers to what happens when you give opioids to a chronic opioid user, namely that you get less effect from the same amount of opioid than you would get in somebody without chronic opioid use. Opioid physical dependence refers to the state of neuroadaptation characterized by withdrawal if opioids were to be abruptly discontinued. So this refers to what happens when you don't give opioids to a chronic opioid user, namely that they will go into withdrawal. Chronic opioid use will invariably lead to both opioid tolerance and opioid dependence. Those are normal physiologic responses and say nothing about the patient's psychological relationship to opioids. Opioid use disorder, on the other hand, is not a normal response to opioid exposure and refers to a problematic pattern of use leading to clinically significant impairment or distress. An opioid-induced hyperalgesia refers to increased perception of pain after opioid consumption, where patients can actually have increased sensitivity to painful stimuli. So to circle back to our first point about how pre-existing opioid users are different, the fact that they're opioid tolerant means that if you give them the same amount of opioid that you would have given to an opioid-naive patient postoperatively, they're likely to experience less adequate pain control than an opioid-naive patient. So how else are pre-existing opioid patients different? Their clinical outcomes are different. So retrospective data, mostly from the orthopedic literature, has shown that patients with pre-existing opioid use have increased severity and duration of pain after their surgery, despite generally using more opioids than their opioid-naive counterparts. They have longer hospital stays, more post-operative complications, and worse outcomes, both in terms of clinical and functional outcomes. And as I said, most of this data comes from the ortho literature, though there was at least one study in a kidney transplant population where those patients had 1.6 to 2 times higher risk of death after transplant if they were using opioids preoperatively. So you can see how we need to consider pre-existing opioid use as a comorbidity in the perioperative period. Yes, I'll take that. So how should we manage these patients differently? Let's talk about the preoperative period first. It's important to take a very detailed history of the patient's opioid use. So how long have they been taking opioids? Which opioids do they take? Dose, frequency, including if they have as-needed prescription, how often are they actually taking it? And what the indication is, you want to be thinking specifically about, is this pain related or unrelated to the upcoming surgery? i.e., do we expect the surgery that we're planning to result in an improvement in this patient's pain and decrease in their opioid use or not? Next, doses should be verified via your state's prescription drug monitoring program, or PDMP. And you want to identify who's prescribing the opioids, assuming it's not you, and what the patient tells you about that should line up with what the PDMP tells you. You want to consider discussing with the patients ahead of time, at least mentioning that preoperative opioid use has been associated with adverse clinical outcomes, and that's why you're spending this extra time and attention characterizing her opioid use. Obviously, you don't want the patient to feel discriminated against or like she's been treated as if you assume she has a misuse problem. But you want to be clear that you are attending to this as a comorbidity because it has clinical ramifications and you really want to optimize her perioperative outcomes. And then finally, you want to assure your patient of your commitment to treating her perioperative pain. You want to recognize that her opioid tolerance may make that more complicated, but that you and your team are committed to effectively managing her pain. Then you want to be clear about what effective pain management actually looks like, which Dr. Rosenquist talked about. And expectation setting is key. So effectively managing her pain does not mean she will be pain-free, and that's one of the expectations you're going to set and manage prior to surgery. And you want to be clear that your goal is to manage her pain such that it's tolerable with a focus on function. Successful pain management postoperatively should focus on function and the patient's ability to participate in her own recovery. So whether or not her pain from her abdominal incision is limiting her ability to ambulate is going to be much more important than how she rates that pain on the pain scale. And then try to set some general expectation about the duration of time that you expect the patient to need additional opioids above baseline after surgery. Obviously, the duration is going to depend on the procedure, on her intraoperative and postoperative course, and there's going to have to be some flexibility there, but I think it's important to even just send the message that there will be a limit, that there won't be opioids indefinitely, as Dr. Rosenquist mentioned, that perioperative pain is acute pain and is expected to have a defined period of time. And also set the expectation about what is the goal postoperatively. Are we expecting to get to opioid independence here, meaning we think that the problem for which she is having a surgery is what's causing her pain and we expect her to wean completely off opioids post-op, or is her preoperative opioid use about chronic non-malignant back pain, and our hope is, our plan, our expectation is to get her back to her baseline use. And then depending on locally available resources and on the amount of opioid that the patient is on preoperatively, you may want to consider a pain consult preoperatively for some of these patients. And how should we manage these patients intraoperatively? Broadly, we want to maximize the use of non-opioid analgesics. Consider dosing preoperatively gabapentin or pregabalin. Consider the use of regional analgesia techniques, and we'll hear more about multimodal pain control during this panel. And then depending on the comfort and the preferences of the anesthesia team, you may want to consider the use of IV ketamine in some of these patients. The thought behind the use of IV ketamine specifically in chronic opioid users is the idea that it may mitigate the central sensitization process by blocking NMDA receptors. In a systematic review, the use of IV ketamine was associated with less opioid use, and in 80% of the included studies also with lower pain scores. But that review was not specific to preoperative opioid users. And ketamine could also be associated with higher rates of nightmares and hallucinations. In the 2016 postoperative pain management guidelines from the APS and others, ketamine is mentioned as an option, and specific mention is made of it possibly being particularly appropriate for highly opioid-tolerant patients. In general, immediately preoperatively and intraoperatively for patients who are on a long-acting opioid at baseline, MS-Contin, OxyContin, fentanyl patch, we do want to continue their long-acting opioid when feasible. So do consider having them take their long-acting opioid the morning of surgery. And then for patients with a fentanyl patch, want to have a discussion at least with your anesthesia team about leaving that on during surgery. I think there's some debate here. When we've had our meetings about creating these modules, there's been some back and forth about this. It's expert opinion based, but one of the concerns is that when the skin temperature is elevated, so in the case of a fever, you can have increased transdermal absorption, and so increased systemic levels of fentanyl from a fentanyl patch. So in the case of a febrile patient, you might want to consider removing it, but otherwise at least have a discussion with your anesthesia colleagues about leaving it on rather than removing it and then be trying to replace that amount of opioid with some other modality, which can be particularly tricky given the long half-life of transdermal fentanyl. And then postoperatively, how should we be managing these patients? So while they're in the hospital, we want to continue to maximize our use of non-opioid analgesics. And we have to anticipate that they may very well need higher than average opioid doses to control their postoperative pain because of the phenomenon of opioid tolerance that we talked about earlier. Obviously, somebody that takes a single 5-milligram tablet of oxycodone a day is going to be different than somebody that's on several hundred milligrams of oral morphine a day. But broadly, retrospective data has suggested that we can expect some of these opioid-tolerant patients to require up to 2 to 4 times as much opioid as opioid-naive patients would require after a similar procedure to control their pain. And does that mean that we should start all patients on pre-existing opioids on doses of opioid 3 times higher than what we're used to post-op? No, that would be overkill. I think it means we need to be prepared to potentially have to titrate up their opioids if needed and not be surprised if we end up treating at least some opioid-tolerant patients with 2 or 3 times the postoperative opioid doses that we're used to for opioid-naive patients. And then again, we want to try to continue their home long-acting opioid if they're on one, uninterrupted if possible. So obviously we don't want to overshoot in terms of exposing these patients to more opioid than is necessary. At the same time, we have to remember that poorly controlled postoperative pain is a risk factor for chronic post-surgical pain. So we're trying to really walk a fine line here. And so scenarios where we might want to consider involving our pain specialist colleagues where available might be a patient who has persistent poorly controlled pain while they're still in the hospital, is on a complex preoperative opioid regimen, or somebody who, for whatever reason, you feel like you need to be adjusting their long-acting opioids while they're in the hospital. Obviously, in general, we don't treat postoperative pain with long-acting opioids because that's acute pain, and we use short-acting opioids for that when needed. But if you have some reason to adjust their long-acting opioids, you may want to ask a friend to help. So at discharge, how about the outpatient postoperative period? You want to make some effort at the time of discharge to base what you prescribe on what they've actually been using in the hospital. It's not an exact science. It can be difficult to predict, obviously, the rate that they'll wean and the duration that they'll need it for, but you want to make some attempt to individualize by use so that that patient who is requiring 2 or 3 times what you're used to in the hospital should be going home with a prescription that looks different than the patient who, you know, isn't requiring dramatically higher doses than an opioid-naive patient. If possible, you want to avoid introducing a new type of opioid at discharge. So if you have a patient who at baseline is on OxyContin and oxycodone, you want that patient's postoperative opioid prescription to also be oxycodone. If you have somebody who's on MS-Contin and immediate-release morphine, you would consider using immediate-release morphine, including in the hospital, because you don't want to change things at discharge, for their postoperative pain. And that's just to minimize the risks associated with having multiple different opioids in the home. And then finally, set expectations as clearly as possible regarding refills. So if your expectation is that this prescription you're sending this patient home with is going to be all that she needs to cover her postoperative pain, after which she will either be opioid independent or back to her baseline, you know, then you want to say so. And if your expectation is that if she were to feel like she needed a refill, she would come in and be clinically evaluated, you know, for any postoperative complication or to have a discussion about the benefits and burdens of continuing her on opioids at that point, ideally you mentioned that to her before she leaves the hospital so that when she calls the clinic and finds out that you're going to want to see her if she needs an opioid refill, she's not surprised. And then after discharge, consider an earlier check-in either by phone or in the clinic with these patients to see how they're progressing so that you don't get the surprise phone call when they're out of opioids after 3 days when you expected your prescription to last them 2 weeks. You want to remain in open communication with the preoperative opioid prescriber. So we heard about this earlier also from Dr. Rosenquist. That's key to avoid these patients sort of silently continuing on opioids by transferring their prescriptions back to their PCP. And I think the PCP also needs to hear from us as the surgeons, what is our expectation postoperatively? If the PCP was prescribing pre-op for something that we expect to get better after surgery, the PCP needs to hear that from us so that we can work together to achieve opioid independence for that patient if that's felt to be the goal. You want to continue to regularly use the PDMP at the time of opioid prescriptions. And if the patient is reporting opioid needs beyond your expected duration or amount, again, consider collaborating, reaching out to either the PCP or our pain specialist colleagues when available to really set up a planned wean. And I think ultimately really keeping our eyes on the prize in terms of are we expecting opioid independence and confirming that we get there, being clear about those expectations of the patient and not having them just sort of go off into the world and continuing on opioids unbeknownst to us. So in summary, pre-existing opioid use is a comorbidity relevant to the perioperative period. These patients have a different physiology in that they are opioid tolerant, and you can expect that they may require higher doses of opioids to control their pain than you would expect in an opioid-naive patient. There is retrospective data to suggest that they have worse clinical outcomes. And with increased awareness and expectation setting and some modifications in the preoperative, intraoperative, and postoperative periods, we can work together to optimize care for these patients. Thank you.